till forever. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I will not mind be done. Well, welcome to the final session Sunday of our Big Book Workshop here at the Overeaters Anonymous 51st birthday party. And we're trying to get our technical stuff together, our focus. And we were just asked a question about willingness regarding financial amends. So let me start by using, once again, Dan S.'s Big Book Awakenings guidebook, which is an aid to going through the steps. Oh, by the way, I didn't put that lapel mic and stuff on. Do I need the lapel mic?
Yeah, it's not working though, Roy.
Oh, well, I'm going to be able to record it?
Yeah.
It's too loud.
Am I all right?
This thing is
working, right? This thing seems to be on.
Maybe people aren't here, and this thing is on.
Is it picking up the recording?
Yeah, we're getting a signal. It's not coming through the speaker.
The speaker will block it.
You know,
we get the techniques about.
If you want to go up and get Jeff or
Jeff down here.
Yeah. But let me. Before we even get.
I've got this recorder right here.
Okay.
It's picking you up good.
Okay. A question was regarding financial amends. Using the technique, what we call the book comfort technique, of turning the statements in the book into questions regarding our nine-step amends process, here are some of the considerations, what we call the considerations and realizations. Right off out of the book, page 76. Am I ready to go out to my fellows and repair the damage done in the past? And I asked yourself, are you not ready? Because remember, if you're not really ready for your ninth step, it's a question of an eighth step issue. You've made a list, but the eighth step is a two-part step. You make a list and then you get willing to make the amends. So every time you're hesitating with a certain process in the steps, it's usually good to... The theory of the steps is you're going to get higher power from each step to get on to the next one. And often with amends, the book thumpers like to put them on cards. Cards are not necessary. You can put them on a list. The book doesn't talk about index cards, obviously. The ones you're ready to make now, the ones you're not ready to make now, and the ones you're never going to make because you hate the SOB or whatever. And you start with your easier ones if you need to, and you'll get more power to make the more difficult ones. So, are you really ready to go out to your fellows and repair the damage done in the past? Do I feel hesitant about going to some of them on a spiritual basis? I misspelled that. Let's get that. Okay. Do I realize that the people being approached will be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries? You don't lead with, I've gotten religion. You know, you lead with, I've done some wrong here and I need to fix this and I really... feel bad about it, and I'm in a 12-step program, and the book's pretty specific about the language. Do I realize I would get more out of going to people I hate and making amends than anything else? And the quote from the book, it's harder to go to an enemy to a friend, but we will find it more beneficial to us. And that has been my personal experience. You know, when I make these amends that I really hate that SOB, the healing is fantastic. Can I go to them in a helpful and forgiving spirit? This is an eight-step issue. If you're not ready to go to the person yet, you may have to do some more prayer on it because your spirit is not ready. It's not helpful and forgiving. I make that remark once again. Have I really become willing to let go of the behavior? You see, if I'm not willing to make financial amends for stealing, I'm probably going to steal again. That's just my personal experience, okay? Each step confirms the previous one. I said that before. And if I'm hesitating on a step, it's probably because I haven't done the previous one totally. Okay? If I'm not making the amends, I'm not really willing to make the amends, which is an eighth step issue. Okay? they, you know, the book thumpers have this slogan, which is true, that you know what the sound of amends is like? It's knocking on a door. You're willing to make the amend when you actually go through it. Otherwise, you're just sitting on a list. You know, you got a list there, but you're not making the amend, so obviously you're not willing. You know, there's the dialing of the phone, the knocking on the door. Hello, this is Roy. I'd like to talk to you about something. That's the sound of an amend, because that means you've got your list and you're willing to do it. Do I realize I'm there to sweep off my side of the street and ignore their part, whatever it is, even if they hurt you? Do I realize I should never try to tell them what they should do, that I shouldn't discuss their part, what they've done to me, their faults at all? Can my manner be frank and open? This is something you want to talk over with your sponsor, because maybe you're going to them with gritted teeth and not in a helpful and forgiving spirit. Maybe you're not ready to make that amends. So it goes to the bottom of your pile. Let's see what else we got here. I don't think so. I got my speakers today. I may be able to play that little video that we couldn't play yesterday of the Bill Wilson 1951 talk.
And when people start to show up, they want to put the timers right here.
Oh, is it ready to go?
Yeah, it's ready to go.
That's okay, well, I can put it on. I don't know if it helps Dave record better, but it may help you all hear better. This thing goes just anywhere here?
Yeah.
I can put on this. Okay.
Well, Actually, no.
I can't put it on
the tag, but it needs to be a little quick.
What do I... All right. Nothing deflates the ego more than going to someone I feel harm me more than I harm them. The key to this is that it was my behavior that put their name on the list. So I got to get real clear in the previous steps that name, even though they've been a jerk and they've really done some really bad things to me, even that, it's my defect that put that name on the list. I'm manifesting myself. It's one of the little overlooked sequences in the process. If you read the book, it says, we consider the self in its common manifestations, period, end of sentence, nuked paragraph, capital R, resentments of the number one offender. So we're looking at our manifestations of self. My defect, my whatever, put that name on the list. I did something to them, then they retaliated to me, but it was my defect that set the ball of fear rolling that put the whole thing. And I made a decision based on self to put me in a position to be hurt, whatever. And until I get clear on that, I probably am not going to be able to go to them in a helpful and forgiving spirit and in a frank and calm and open manner. I got to get clear that they're on my list. Yes, okay, let's grant it. Stipulate. Yes, they are an asshole. But why is this asshole's name on my resentment list? And I have to get real clear that it was my defect in my behavior that put that name there. The fact that they're an asshole out in the universe is a given. And, you know, once I clear up my resentment and lose that resentment, they may go out and do the same assholic behavior to other people, but they're not going to show up on my resentment list anymore. Okay, I'm cleaning up my side of the street here. You cannot prevent other people from being who they are. That's the first principle of Al-Anon. You know, you're powerless over the alcoholic's behavior. Just because you get on a spiritual path, and the people who wrote that book, they were going to meetings where there were more non-alcoholics than alcoholics. Many of them, the wives and spouses or relatives of alcoholics. And the book says that our way of life has its benefits to all, and we get the family on a spiritual basis, and often that helps the alcoholic get sober. Sometimes, but they will continue on their path. And that's the same with these amends, you know. I clean up my side of the street, forget what they did to me, forget the fact they are a major asshole. That's their problem. I'm not, you know. All right, now we're getting to the young lady's questions about financial amends, criminal offenses. Did I arrange the best deal to let these people know I'm sorry? And I mentioned yesterday, the DA told me I don't have to starve or be deprived to pay off creditors. If I'm not taking care of myself in a healthy way, my earning power is impaired and it will take longer to pay them off. I am not my debt. Okay, you don't have to put yourself into a starvation mode just because you have some financial amends. and you can talk it over with accountants, lawyers, etc. You know, it's a legal issue whether or not to declare bankruptcy. It's a moral issue. Do you owe them money? And remember, you're not paying them back with your money. You're paying them back their money that they lent you or whatever. Okay? Criminal offenses. I've only been in this position once, and it was in sobriety, in a recovery, abstinence. I'll tell you about that. I've asked God to be given the strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences can be. This is a scary one. I'll talk about that. Am I willing to lose my position or reputation or face jail? Wow. Are other people involved who might be needlessly sacrificed? If I got a family to support, I just don't want to turn myself in on a warrant and leave my family starving for the next 6 months, you know. We have to consider others before we make amends. Have I secured their consent? That means the family permission and consulted with others, a lawyer, for instance, and ask God's help and guidance. You know, you got to ask your higher power for help and guidance in these situations. Do I believe I have to place the outcome of these men's in God's hands, or I will start eating again? Now here's the question, based on page 78, about whether you're willing to turn yourself in on warrants and things. Will I eat over this again? I mean, is it tearing you up? Is it ruining? Are you losing sleep? Are you going to eat over this again? I'm not going to tell any sponsee, yeah, turn yourself in, go to jail. I don't have that kind of wisdom or power. It's really about, am I going to eat over this? I've had some cases where sponsee had some pretty gnarly amends, and there was a lot of, they could file charges against me, this and that. You know, I'm not going to tell you what to do, pal. I'm going to show you what the book says, and you're going to have to decide if you don't make this amend, are you going to eat over it? And that's a question you need to ask yourself about whatever daunting financial amends are facing you. What happened to me once, and I'll tell a personal story. I'm coming in back from Europe, actually, and I stopped off with my brother, and I was going to take some training to get certified in another state where he was. And I said, and he was just crazy. He was up to 300 pounds at the time. He's kind of abusive. It was really a money issue because I probably, you know, I could have stayed in a motel or, you know, but he was letting me stay with him. He lent me a car, you know. I'm thinking, oh, God, well, I have to put up with this because I want a place to stay in the car. I didn't have a lot of money. And he's just so abusive and unpleasant. And I was going to go through this training. And he says, I got a buddy. He's on that board. He'll certify you for $150. Just give him $150. And everything will be cool. You won't have to stay here and go through the training course, whatever. And at first I said, well, I don't know. Well, you know, that really, it wasn't about trying to pull a fast one or, you know, not rendering unto Caesar what a Caesar is, or trying to save money. It was really about, God, if I just give this guy the money and get out of here, I don't have to put up with my brother for 3 more days, because I was on my way to California. And I did it. He said, just pay this guy the money, he'll sign you off on it. He was a friend of my brother. And I did it. 6 years later, or whatever it was, headlines, this guy was arrested for fraud, for putting through all these improper applications that he just signed off without the proper holy mackerel, you know, I'm one of his people. Are they going to come after me? And I really got scared. I thought, like, 21 years on the program, oh, there's my sponsor now, the one being taken off in handcuffs, you know, and I'm getting all paranoid. And that guy actually went to jail. He did time for this over fraud, the guy who really did it. And I confessed it at a meeting. I was so scared, you know. Well, I said, you know, some people have too many years and not enough days, you know. And when I went to look back at the situation, at that point, I was kind of in a weak spiritual condition, coming through on my way to California, not enough money, kind of. And I didn't have enough integrity or sanity. And I didn't ask God's guidance. I didn't sit in meditation and say, all right, God, what should I do about this situation? I just said, oh yeah, let me get out of here, you know, big deal, I'll give him this money, I'll get out of here, I want to stay with my brother another 3 days and be abused. And I didn't have enough integrity and spirituality and inner guidance at that point to make the right decision. So I made the wrong decision. Now I'm in all this fear. Well, what happened was I didn't get any trouble. They never even knew that the state never contacted me anything. But I went back to the state at my own expense and went through the training, even though it cost me some money. But at least I can honestly say that I went through the training and it's not a fraud, you know. The guy got into trouble, the guy who was making the fraudulent, to put me fraudulent applications through. So that was the only time I thought I might have to face jail over in a minute. And I didn't turn myself into the state and say, yeah, I didn't really go. I didn't do anything, is what I did. I made the amends by going back and doing what I should have done the first time. Like when I didn't, when I mentioned yesterday about a term paper I left off my first inventory list. And the proper thing to do would not be to go to a professor and say I plagiarized, because then he'd flunk me and maybe get me expelled. The proper thing to do was to, and which I did years later, I paid back the university for that master's thesis that I stole from their library, and sent them $100. And now I'm on their building fund solicitation list. I get letters from them. They're always looking for more money from me. So. But the proper way to handle that would be to pay them back for the property you stole and take the course over again and do the work that you should have done. You don't have... So this is a tricky situation. And Dan S., who wrote this book, the book says if you think you're going to eat over this, you may have to face jail. That's the truth. If you did something criminal to hurt somebody... and you're losing sleep over it, and you can't stay abstinent, you may have to do it. It's a personal case-by-case thing that you have to go into guidance with your sponsor, your higher power. The question remains, will it heal anything or help anything if you do turn yourself in? If you punch some guy out, and you don't even remember who the hell it is, and you know you assaulted him, you're going to go into that jurisdiction, to the local police station, and say, you know, I punched it. I mean, if the guy filed charges, I don't know. Is the situation going to be healed by it? Does it do you any good to do jail time? You know, if you committed a heinous felony and you can't stay abstinent, you may have to. It's really case by case. I'm not going to, what's that old saying, don't judge a man unless you walked in his moccasins. I have never had to really face serious jail time over a felony. Although this was fraud, actually, the guy got some time over it. But they never said a thing, they never prosecuted me, so I just cleaned it up as best I could. So I'm not going to tell somebody to do something I haven't had to do. Okay, I've had to get a food sponsor, I've had to get abstinent, I had to get on a food plan, I had to call in my food, so I'm always willing to tell somebody to do that. So it's really a case-by-case basis, and you have to bring your higher power into this, and then really the answers are in you. Are you going to be able to stay abstinent if you don't make the amend? That's the real question, and that's something only you can decide. Okay, will I eat over this? Have I been able to stop eating over this? Will I eat over this again if I don't make amends? That's the real question. I talked about my term paper. Material being well-being always followed spiritual progress. It never preceded it. I didn't do something right spiritually. It changed the whole course of my life. I never got my career back. Okay, it's always like that with us, it says in the book. Oh, now these are the 9-step promises, and the funny thing is they're an exact answer to the bedevilments, really. Let me see if I can find them now, because everything changes. There they are. This is in Dan's Awakening. Oh, that's what I got a whole box of those things in my trunk of my car. If we could, here are the bedevilments. If you guys want some of these, we sold a couple yesterday. I don't make any money off of this, but I told Dan I'm doing this workshop. I'm going to mention his guide. If he wants, I'll bring a box of his stuff. He says, here, take a box. Hold on. Oh, there it is. Okay. So this is actually in his guide somewhere. I have no idea where now. Fortunately, I can get it on the screen. It's in there. I thought it was in there somewhere.
Put your hand up.
Yeah, it's in the handout from yesterday, but I'm out of, I didn't print anymore. But anyway, here they are. And the devilments are on page 52, which shows the spiritual malady. And the ninth step promises, and we're talking now about the ninth step, you know, and if you're painstaking about this part of your spiritual development, they're talking about your amends. See, this is the crucial part. That's where I got my spiritual awakening, was making that amend to that guy who intimidated me and threatened to knock my block off, and I hated the SOB. And it was really an amend to myself because I didn't assert myself properly. I lost my temper instead of saying, you know, this feels abusive, I don't need this, I'm leaving. So, look at, you know, 52 to 83, what is that, 30 pages, 31 pages? Okay. We were having trouble with personal relationships on page 52. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in ourselves. Self-seeking will slip away. It won't, your relationships won't always be what's in it for me. I'll do something for you if you're going to do something for me. You know, and you keep a score sheet in your head, that changes. You know, self-seeking will slip away. We couldn't control our emotional natures. It says we're going to comprehend the word serenity and know peace. Fantastic. The book thumpers are the same. My goal is not necessarily cash and prizes, you know, the right car, the right job, the right title, the right wife, whatever. My goal is a quiet mind and a loving heart. That's a hell of a goal, quiet mind and love. That's my goal today, because I never did get the cash and prizes or Miss Right. I met Miss Wrong. She got me to Al-Anon about 30 years ago, you know. And I've always been grateful to her. Let's see. We were prey to misery and depression. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. You know, we're gonna be happy, joyous, and free. One of the greatest promises in the book, I think, it's in Vision for You, right? We couldn't make a living. And, you know, you got financial fear of people, and economic insecurity, believe us. I mentioned yesterday that that third step, there's a contract involved. You know, now you got a new employer. He's your director. You're the actor. He's the principal. I'm the agent. I've always been, even though I never got my career back, I've always been taken care of in this program. I've got some amazing stories about how the time I went to the Bali AA roundup in Indonesia and left my faucet running in my tub for 3 or 4 weeks. And I came, and yeah, it didn't flood. It went down the drain, but there was black mold all over the apartment. And the landlord was just, you know, it was a rent-controlled apartment. He wanted to renovated up the rent anyway, and this gave him the perfect excuse to get me out of there, because it was my fault, obviously. I was an idiot, you know. And I thought I was going to be 25 years on the program and homeless. And he's, you know, there was a $16,000 lawsuit, and I'm negotiating with him. The bottom line was, I was taken care of. When the smoke cleared, he actually gave me move-out money, because he wanted his apartment back. There was no real damage. We wiped off the mold, and you couldn't have said that there was anything wrong in the apartment a few days later, but he wanted his apartment back. And I screwed up, so it was a year-long situation of talking to lawyers, I'm talking to the rent control board, and he's got a lawyer. All the smoke clears, you know, it cost me about $3,000, the whole mess. There was a mold remediation consultation, you know. It was a classic case of, you know, Roy's an F up of maximum proportion. I was taken care of. When I was going through the steps again at the time, my sponsor says, your landlord's not on your resentment list. I said, no, this is a business thing. I mean, I screwed up. He wants his apartment back. I really didn't have any negative emotions. I knew I'd messed up. It was embarrassing, obviously. But, you know, the smoke cleared, and the guy I was working the step with, I finally find an apartment. The guy offers me move-out money, so I find an apartment. The guy I'm working the steps with, I said, well, I got to move. I don't know if I can meet you for step work next week. He says, I got a van. I'll move you. I just moved. You know, the whole thing was taken care of. I've always been taken care of. So I got less money than when I was 2 years on the program, and I got less fear. So you explain that. It's not the money. It's you lose the fear of financial insecurity. You may be in financial insecurity. Your accountant may tell you you're insolvent. Your accountant may tell you you are in debt, but you're not afraid. You just know you're going to be taken care of as long as you do the work. We're full of fear. Oh, wait, we had a feeling of uselessness. And it says, that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. So, I feel useful. I can go put on a big book seminar. Okay? You had a question?
Yes, please.
Go ahead.
Can you talk about what that means, no matter how far down the scale we have gone? I've never understood that.
All right, I will talk about that a little bit. But let me get through this, and then we'll talk about that. All right. We were full of fear. We wouldn't truly know how to handle situations used to baffle us. You know, you know what my sponsor said to me when I went through the process about 7 years? I went through them. He said, he listened to my inventory, heard all the resentments and all this. He says, your problem's simple. You got self-hatred due to fear. You know, there are people that push your buttons. Bullies used to push my buttons, this and that. There are situations that scare you, and you can't handle them. And you got fear of them, so you hate yourself for it. And the truth that set me free is this. The book talks about there are 100 forms of fear. And the real form, what's the form underneath that 100 forms of fear? The real fear is of myself, I'm not enough. I can't handle this. I ain't going to make it on my own power. Even though the outsides might look good, you know, you might have some condo or some car or some job title. You know deep down inside, you're just not enough. You're leading a double life, right? You're the actor presenting this double image. So the real form underneath the 100 forms of fear is I'm not enough on my own power. And you know the truth that set me free? I'm not enough on my own power. If I was enough on my own power, why the hell would I be here looking for a higher power? That's the truth. We're not enough. We need a higher power. This is a spiritual program. The main purpose of this book is to allow you to form a personal relationship with God of your own understanding. We went through this. The main purpose of this book and this process here. We were unhappy, so we're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. No matter how far down the scale we've gone, we see how our experience can benefit others. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on this. I'm going to mention this. And most of all, we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for himself. Of myself, I'm not enough. I am not enough. I ain't going to make it on Roy power. If I could make it on Roy power, what the hell would I be doing here, looking for a higher power? You know, and it's the food that brings us, is our first, the food is the catalyst that brings us to powerlessness. We can't handle the food. We come in here and find out that food's but a symptom anyway. We got to get down to the causes and conditions. And we find a way of life, quote from the book. A design for living, quote from the book. This is a way of life, okay, that heals us. The A 12 and 12. I think it's page 15. I can't remember. It's in the forward. It says, and I'll say for Overeaters Anonymous, the steps of Overeaters Anonymous are a series of spiritual principles which, you know, expel the obsession to eat compulsively and render the practitioner usefully whole. Let me see if I don't want to misquote it. It tells you what these steps are all about. Yeah. Okay, this is the forward, page 15 of the AA 12 and 12, but it applies to OA too. OA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature. It's not therapy, folks. It's which is practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to compulsively overeat and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. So that's what the 12 steps are. They're a way of life if I practice them. And we suddenly will realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And you can get all this stuff on the Jay Walker website, which I put up there. My writing is kind of terrible. Now, let's get back to how far down the scale we've gone. I don't know if I'm going to get the time to get into the advanced chapters today. But if you look in the advanced chapters, and also more about alcoholism, in the chapter of the wives, we talk about alcoholic number one, compulsive overeater number one, compulsive overeater number two, compulsive overeater number three, there are various degrees of the disease. It says in one of those advanced chapters that sometimes, I think it's in the family afterward, that when the compulsive overeater hits the program, the only asset he has is his story. I mean, and in terms of these first edition level alkies who wrote this book, man, they were unemployable for years. Their families had thrown them out. They had done jail time. They had tried to commit suicide. They hadn't worked in it for years. They had nothing. You know, Clarence Snyder arrived in Cleveland in a blizzard. He'd hocked his overcoat, so he had kind of one of those wool button sweaters, an old hat, one brown shoe, one black shoe, one pair of pants, a dirty shirt. He'd hocked all his clothes, and he passed out in the lobby of City Hospital in Akron, where he was going to meet Bob. He collapsed, and they put him in a room. He wakes up, and they're cleaning him up, and they put him in a room, and there's Bob. They knock him out with Peralta. Well, no, he didn't take the Peralta. He refused to drink the Peralta. But so all you arrive with is your story. Some the guys who wrote the book. Some of us, of course, we still have jobs. We have a house. We have a family. We have a car. But no matter how far down the scale you've gone, your experience can benefit others. You see, your story may be the only asset you have. But we're going to get to this in the 12th step. You can save somebody's life when no minister can save their life, no psychiatrist, no family member, no judge is threatening you with jail time, no parole officer says, you do this again, you're going back, no friend, why are you doing this to yourself? Frothy emotional appeal doesn't suffice. You, with your story of how you ate off the floor or ate frozen food or chugged a bottle of maple syrup like I did once, ate out of the garbage, and then you know, I threw the pizza away the night before, but all of a sudden it starts looking good for breakfast, and I'm digging out the crust from the garbage, you know. With that insane story, you can save somebody's life, no matter how far down the scale you've gone. See, Harlan's story is so powerful because he went to the 700-pound level, you know. And so that's what it means. You know, and people have gone down to the scales they've committed, in AA anyway. They've committed murder, they've done all sorts of things. They've done serious time, they were solitary. And then they come out and they're a circuit speaker. You know, only in AA, the worse your life has been, the more popular you are as a speaker. You know, it's a bizarre phenomenon. And in a way, it's OA too. You know, we have the 100-pounders meetings and they only ask speakers who've lost 100 pounds, you know. So there you go. No matter how far scale you're down. All right, let's see. Let's get back to do I still have something open here? Yes, I do. All right. Ninth step promises. Oh, yeah. Now, if you've done the steps and the amends, by this time you should have had a spiritual awakening. And your mind should be quieting since you cleaned up. What are resentments? I'm thinking about the past. What is fear? I'm worrying about the future. If you've gone through this process painstakingly, which means it takes pains, it's painful to put yourself on a budget because you got a series of creditors you got to pay off. That's painful. You know, you have to contract your life for a while. You know, you don't have to move from your nice three bedroom to a studio necessarily, but I know people. There's some stories on the internet. This one guy, he ripped off a lot of people building up this big business. He had this big house, and he realized, I'm not going to stay sober if I don't pay these guys back. And he got his wife's permission, and they downsized to a modest house. Their kids were gone, fortunately. But they sold their fancy house. Was it even a trailer or something? I mean, he really downsized. Because the next 5 years, he spent paying off his creditors. He didn't wind up on the street. He didn't suffer. He never starved. But he definitely went from Beverly Hills to, like, you know, the trailer park or something, but for the next 5 years he paid off it, and within 10 years he was back on top again. He started a new business. But he knew he couldn't stay sober unless he took care of that. So your mind should be, these promises that we just looked at are an indication of how well you've done your program. I'm not trying to get anybody to beat up on themselves, but I'm going through the steps again because I wake up thinking about a couple people. And I don't want to be thinking about these people. So I go through the steps again. You know, I'm basically pretty cool now, pretty happy, pretty serene, except in traffic sometimes I lose it. But I got some real problems with traffic. The Santa Monica Police Department was definitely on my resentment list. The last few tickets I've gotten have been on my bicycle on my way to meetings. Yeah, there's a little fanatical cop in Santa Monica. He's just His partner is, he's an idiot. My partner is technically, I've been wrong. I mean, you know. Most of my tickets have been on the way to meetings. You know, I'm in a hurry to get my serenity. You know what I mean? So I have to look at that. All right, so you clean up the wreckage of the past. You shouldn't be thinking about your resentments. You should be out of your fear, even though you may have to downsize financially. You're going to be taken care of. Remember the contract. You're going to be taken care of if you do this. That's what they told Clarence Snyder. If you do this, pal, God is your manager now. You always eat. You always eat. And that's the height of the Depression. A lot of people didn't have jobs. Bill Wilson was homeless early. He never got his career on Wall Street kicking again. They lost the Burnham family brownstone. That's Lois Burnham. Her father was a doctor. They had a family brownstone. The Morgan, it was the Depression. People were foreclosing left and right. He became homeless. They put their furniture in storage. He had to sleep on people's couches for a while. This was a guy who was once a big shot on Wall Street. He never got that job back, but he was taken care of. And that's been my personal experience. Even though I never got my career back because of an amend I left off. I don't blame God for that. I don't blame God for that at all. You know? It's my own misery I created. But I've always been taken care of. I leave the faucet on for 3 weeks while I'm in Indonesia. I'm taken care of. I'm always taken care of. One time I thought I was going to lose my license because I was running so many stop signs in Mill Valley. I looked for a new apartment closer to the meetings because I said, well, I'm going to be on my bicycle for the next year. And somehow I was taken care of it. I don't know if I have time to tell that story today, but I swear to God, I felt like God had... There was this like hanging judge, this municipal traffic judge who was famous. He didn't want to hear it. The cop was always right. He wouldn't let you go to traffic school if you'd had a ticket within the last 3 years. He just wanted to raise money for the city. And I'd been up before, you know, and this was like, I had this thing about running red lights. And all these cops, and I blame the cops, of course, they're in Mill Valley with the Raider guns because they got nothing better to do, you know. And I'm blaming everything. And my sponsor said, Roy, this is wrong, Roy. You got to obey the traffic law. And I thought, that's it. I'm going to lose my license. I got my fifth ticket within the year or something. And it was Christmas time, and I said, this is it. I'll be on my bicycle. And it was Christmas time, so the guy was on Christmas leave, vacation. And there was some local lawyer who took over for him. And I started giving him my song and dance, and he looks at me and goes, you didn't see the cop, did you? And I go, no. All right. When's the last time you went to traffic school? I don't know, 18 months ago. All right, go ahead, go to traffic school. And I've always been taken care of. And I started to, you know, watch my driving after that, of course. Let's see. Since time, have you been reborn? One of the promises of the book. Have you been relieved of your obsession with food and overeating? If you still got the obsession, you might want to go through your steps again. Now, don't confuse the obsession with the craving. The obsession means it's just overpowering and you're going to eat again. And it could be the mental blank spot, or it could be, you know, forgetting that you're a compulsive overeater. The craving is, you know, I'm never maybe going to have a normal relationship with food or something, you know. But the obsession is overpowering. It'll drive out any sane, rational thoughts or memories of what food does to you. So if once in a while you look enviously at somebody who can eat ice cream with impunity, that doesn't mean you've got the obsession back in your life. It just means, you know, Dr. Bob, the first 2 years of his recovery, he had to constantly work with an alcoholic because he still had a strong physical craving for alcohol. But the physical craving is not the same as an obsession, which means, you know, you go blank, the blinders come on, you're headed towards the food. That's the obsession. You know, you don't give a shit about anything. I'm eating, you know. It's overpowering. It's like a demon you're possessed. I don't have my 34 dictionary, but one of the definitions of an obsession is some sort of a demonic possession or something. And that's the obsession. Craving means, okay, you know, you smell a bakery, God, would I like to eat some of that, you know. But you should be relieved for the most part, of your obsession to eat. Let's talk about the big book, of course, and I am a book guy. But the big book, this is Sandy B. is one of Sandy Beach is he's a famous circuit speaker, and he's one of the best, if not one of the, you know, he's as good as anybody who ever lived as far as being a speaker. Very articulate guy. He says, don't confuse the treasure map with a treasure. The book is the treasure map. There's no magical power in the book. It's, you know, it's not a Torah or a Bible or a Koran. You know, you don't have to kiss it. It's a book. It's meant to communicate a process of recovery. Bill prayed for guidance and inspiration to write it. He came up with a book. That's a good argument for the existence of a higher power. I've heard atheists and agnostics say, well, if that book's divinely inspired, the telephone book's divinely inspired. If you don't believe in God, you can't believe anything's divinely inspired. He believed he was being inspired. He asked for inspiration, and he came up with this. So if you're an atheist and agnostic, what have you come up with? I don't know. You answer that yourself, you know. So, but it's not a magic. It's not the higher power. The book is still a book. And one of the things I'm going to do now, since I can, is show you that the message can be transmitted by word of mouth before we had the book. And I'm going to play you that 1951, hopefully. If I can find my downloads thing. Where the hell is it? See downloads in here somewhere?
Yeah.
Where, left?
One mile, no, you went too fast.
Went too far here?
Right.
Yeah?
Went to the E and then go up.
Went to the E.
Yeah, to the E.
Do I go up or to the
go
right?
Right above Internet Explorer.
Right above Internet
Which
Explorer.
Is at the very
oh, there it is. There it is. Okay. All right, let's do a search here on Dallas. Bill Wilson, Second Talk Dallas. And I think that the part I'm going to play is about 9 minutes and 30 seconds in. The first of it is, it's not... I mean, it's all good, but let's see here. I want to go about 9 minutes and 30 seconds in.
Samuel, that he was not...
No, here.
On a very poor, lodging that unconscious
Who's
observation.
Speaking?
Now, this is Bill Wilson in 1951 in Dallas, where he's going around the country doing a little PR work, trying to convince the Alkies that the traditions which they just rammed through in the 1950s convention, and a lot of the, you know, people were giving them static. What do you mean, traditions? We don't have any rules, you know. But he got it through, and he's going around doing a little PR work, telling you this is good, it's okay, we got traditions, they're not laws, they're not rules. So he was doing a big kind of tour all over the country at this point. And this is one of his talks, and he did Fort Worth and Dallas. And it's covering the same material in the Three Legacies tape, where he's basically telling a story. The first 12-step call of Evie and his hospital experience where he had his white light. Now this is in Passing On, which I didn't bring today. I had it yesterday. It's written down in Passing On, which is his AA biography. Now here's my point. You'll see him say in this during this recording, well, that's essentially what's at the heart of the AA program today. In other words, the thing that he later developed into the big book was transmitted word of mouth by Evie. And what was crucial to me is to understand that and also to get the tone of Evie's pitch. It was not evangelical. It was not you better accept Jesus as your personal savior or you never stop drinking. It was gentle, personal. The book says, ultimately, the message is simple and personal. That's the line from the big book. It's one of the forwards of the preface or something. And you'll see that here. Just dig the tone, the way Evie, well, Bill, you got to get honest with yourself. Just dig the tone, the way Bill describes it.
Can you let her know that I would have to be locked up?
Pardon me?
Mic for the recording.
Oh, good. Well,
unless,
should I record the recording? I mean, I don't know. The mic for the recording. All right, is this a pickup mic, too?
Yeah.
Where is this? It's coming out of the speakers, right? So I put this over my speakers. I don't know. I mean, you can get this tape on the internet.
Okay.
from www.recoveryspeakers.org and got it.
All right.
But I'll play it for y'all. So he's describing the fact, I'll give you the setup, the backstory, as we say in showbiz. He's dying of alcoholism. He's been in town's hospital 3 times already within the past, I don't know. His brother, he didn't have any money. His brother-in-law was an osteopathic physician named Dr. Leonard Strong, was footing the bill for his hospitalizations. Town's hospital was kind of a high-tone, dry-out place for wealthy drunks. But he didn't have any money anymore. He was unemployable. Lois was supporting him, working in Lowe's department store in Brooklyn. And he was once the big shot on Wall Street, now his wife's supporting him. He didn't like that too well. Remember, this is the 30s, you know. It was still more traditional. America was more religious. America was more traditional. Divorce was still a bit of a scandal. Usually the husband was the breadwinner. So he's in the hospital, and he overhears Silkworth telling Lois outside the door of his room, you know, I'm sorry, Mrs. Wilson, I thought Bill was one of these guys that would, he had such desire to quit, and he had such intelligence and character, I thought he might be one of these very few who make it, but I'm sorry, I think he's just like all the rest. What do you mean? Well, once alcoholism has taken a hold, it's like an obsession, it's a disease. They will die of this. I'm sorry to say this, but I think within 6 months to a year, he's going to have to be locked up, or he's going to have a wet brain, or he's going to die in a convulsion, a withdrawal. He's going to be like all the rest of them. Bill talks about in his story in the book about he's going to join the endless procession of sots who marched off into oblivion. Okay, so this, and he says, he overhears this, and he says, they didn't need to tell me, I knew it already. So let's see where we can pick this up here.
I would go mad or die.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, let me get a little, hold on, let me go.
So that was the real...
All right, let me maybe a little bit back. No, that's a little too far. All right, let's see what we got.
Well, I've gone this same way over the centuries past. My fear now is the obsession is to be that it cannot be broken. And again, Lois pleaded, but doctor, what does that mean? And you know what he had to say. He had to let her know that I would have to be locked up somewhere. Unless soon I would go mad or die. So that was the realization that she shared with me, as many a wife has shared with her mate. Time out of mind. And even in the days since AA. Now that realization of hopelessness, paradoxically enough, lies at the very root of our success, as you all know. What was the next realization of great moment?
This is it.
Well, it was the realization on the part of a friend who thought he had an answer that I might leave his house. So a friend came to me.
Heavy fact.
Even as friends have since come to you, hoping that they could be helpful. This was an old schoolmate. I hadn't seen him for years. Since I had learned a good deal about this malady by then, I had long since tabbed him as a hopeless one.
Heavy was
like
heavy.
Me.
It was worse than
Heavy
him.
Was a New York sober. He was on the telephone. I said, come over. We'll drink. Heavy, we'll talk about the good old days. Ah, what great sport there was in that unconscious observation. We'll talk about the good old days. Why would we talk about the good old days? Because for us the future was unbearable. The present was unbearable. There was no future. That's why we would live in the past. He and I. Over that crock of gin on my kitchen table. So soon, like many a friend has come since, he's looking across the table at me. Somehow I sensed that he was not just on the water wagon. Something had happened. He told me he didn't want to drink. I said, are you on the water wagon? He said, oh no, I'm just not drinking. Oh come, said I, what's got into you? And he looked at me and said, I've got religion. Well, for a lusty agnostic like me, that was a terrible disappointment.
A lusty
agnostic? I felt mortally let down. I said, my God, my poor friend has got religious insanity. It takes the place of alcoholic insanity. Too bad. So I said, well, come now, tell me what brand of religion is it?
What brand of religion is it?
He said, well, I wouldn't call it religion exactly. Just common sense, nothing new about it.
Common sense, nothing new.
But for me, it didn't do the trick. I feel as though my obsession has been taken away from me. He said, I feel that I have been released. Strange statement for a man on the lottery to make. No, this was something different. Well, I said, what's the formula? Tell me. And so then he gave me the elements, which today lie at the core of our procedure in AA.
Today lies at the core.
And he put them in very simple language.
Simple.
Old ancient principles, old as the hills. Said he, by contact with a certain group of people,
Oxford group,
I pick up these ideas. They emphasize them. Certainly there's nothing new.
Nothing new.
I got honest with myself about my own defects. I quit this living alone. I talked out my defects with another person. I made a confession. I made a list of the people I'd harmed and visited them. I made as what amends and restitution I could. And I learned about a new kind of giving, at least new to me. The kind of giving that demands no reward. I was told that I ought to try to help other people without any demand for prestige or material consideration. Now he said, I know you're awful gun-shy on this religious stuff. He said, I'm not a guy with any theology or any favor. He said, I do believe in God. God as I understand it. And he said, in order to make this simple program work in my life, I found it necessary to pray to whatever God there was, as I understood him.
Pray to whatever God?
Such was my friend's message to me.
Now listen to this.
And such has this message in its essence been ever since.
That's the essence.
As simple as that. And
I mean, no evangelicism, no, you better take God as your first. Well, you just get honest with yourself about your eating, you know, you quit this living alone, join OA, you make an inventory and a confession, age-old spiritual principles, old as the hills, confessions are very old. You make restitution to the people you've harmed, and you help people with no thought of compensation or prestige. And throughout the whole process, you just pray to whatever God you think there is. Yes?
Yeah. He mentions the water wagon.
That just means, you know, when you're on the water wagon, that means you're not drinking. It's like, just, you know, grace, you know, hanging on at grace sheet my first 2 weeks of, I mean, I'm on the wagon means I'm not drinking.
Because I know that sometimes with people that I've been with and I'm not eating, like, let's say something, and they'll say, oh, you're being good.
Well, that they don't get you.
Right.
There's a big difference between on the wagon and being relieved of the obsession. If you read his story, he said he looked at Eddie because something was different. In the book it says he was more than inwardly changed. His roots grasped the new soil. If I've had a spiritual awakening, people can sense it. Okay, I've known dry drunks who are just not drinking today, and they're miserable. And if you're, and I was miserable my first 2 weeks of abstinence on gray sheet. I'm not eating. I was on gray sheet, you know, and I was starving to death, and I was miserable. My first sponsor wouldn't let me put milk in my coffee. I hate black coffee. To this day, I hate black coffee. So it was a one-size-fits-all food plan back in those days. Now, the only other thing, does this interest you, this tape and all?
Oh, yeah.
The important thing that struck out for me was just the common sense, low-key pitch of this is the first 12-step call, if you want to put it in that way. Or you could say Roland Haggard saved Debbie from the judge in Windsor, in Vermont. That may have been the first 12-step call. But the first one, but Bill is the one that got, you know, by Evie had about, you know, In the book, Bill says, never mind the musty past, there sits a miracle in front of me at my kitchen table. A miracle. That's what it was like in 1934. This is November of 34. Everybody had died of alcoholism since biblical times and predating biblical times. The very fact that you could live is miraculous. It's like penicillin. Before penicillin, you have blood poisoning, you're dead. Lobar pneumonia, you're dead. 100 other degree disease infections, you're dead. Penicillin comes along. It's a miracle drug. They used to call it miracle drug. Before 1935, you had alcoholism, you died. And I imagine the compulsive overeaters too. Gluttony was it was called. I don't think they called it compulsive overeating back then. The gamblers, the sex addicts, the dope fiends, the drunks, the you die. So he's looking at Ebby and he's saying this is a miracle. Now how much sobriety time did Ebby have that Bill's calling it a miracle? 2 months. And it's a miracle. You only have 2 months. But he could sense something was different. He's not on a water bag. His roots grasped in the soil. So if Ebby's a miracle with 2 months, what am I with 32 years? Now, the only other part of this I want to play is he couldn't stop drinking after Ebby brought him the message. And his agnostic mind is very intelligent. Bill was a very bright guy. He studied science. He passed Edison's test. Edison offered him a job at his Menlo Park laboratories. He turned it down because he wanted to be an even bigger shot on Wall Street. That's the kind of guy he was. Low self-esteem, he's got to be a big shot to compensate. So I'm not going to be under the shadow of Edison. So he can't get it out of his mind that this guy is sober. He can't believe it. This is the guy he used to say, if I ever get as bad as him, I'm going to quit. And he gets as bad as him and he can't quit. He can't get it out of his mind that Ebby, that asshole, is sober. And I'm not. And his agnosticism, there can't be a God. I solved this problem for myself a long time ago. See, remember Bill's story, chapter 4 in the book is called We Agnostics, not You. He was an agnostic. He described himself as a lusty agnostic. He's the kind of guy that he loved to debate with people who said they were Christians or believers and show how stupid they were because he was so smart. What about all those Christians who killed each other in World War I? Blah, 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 blah. You know, he loved that stuff. Excuse me. So now, he can't get Ebby out of his mind.
Yet, in the hands of another alcoholic, capable of penetrating and healing, as those ancient verities never healed alcoholics before. The secret was, of course, that one alcoholic was talking to another. So what he said struck me deep. Indeed, he lived in my sense, had lived in my strange world, but now I saw that he had been taken out of that world. His sanity had been restored. Fortunately, he didn't try to evangelize me, or pressure me, or save my soul, as desirable as that could have been, and probably would still be. He finally took his leave. Well, I went on drinking. In those days, I was on a bottle of gin a day to be teed up, and two or three a day when I got tight, which was pretty often. Lois was at work in her department store. I was pretty rough on the great Wall Street guy, she now being a provider. You guys here understand that, some of it. So I sat in that kitchen, I kept on drinking several days, but in no waking up. Could the thought of my friend leave me? In no waking hour, could I expel those principles from my mind he had advocated? And yet I rebelled at the God concept. How could one get that? Well, at length, I came to the same conclusion you fellows have, and you gals, who have been in this extremity. I said to myself, after all, who are beggars to be children? I am a doomed one. And if I had cancer, if carcinoma was my trouble, I would gladly place myself in charge of any physician there was who could exercise those hellish steps. And is not this thing, alcoholism, a cancer of the body, a cancer of the emotions? And yes, if there be such a thing, is it not a cancer of the soul? So if there be any great physician, you had better seek him out. So with that realization, I took the decision, as you have since, to go to the hospital and get dried up. Incidentally, being kind of a conservative damn Yankee, I didn't want to have any of this down south shot religion, you know. So I went up to hospital. Like all other drunks on their way to be cured for the last time, I got tied to the tick and came in there waving a bottle and shouting at the doctor I had something. He said, "Well, I'm afraid you have, my boy. You better get upstairs and go to bed." So I went just upstairs and I went to bed, and in 3 days I was all free of alcohol and sedation. See, I'd gone a month early before the DTs caught up with me. When suddenly one morning, a day I was feeling mighty low, in the door there stood my friend. Well, I hadn't seen him for years. I know he was hard up. There he was, way uptown New York, early in the morning, soon. I thought, as you have since thought, this man practices what he preaches. Then I got a little scared of evangelizing. He turned on that sweetness and light button. Oh, no, he's Cajun, just like we were. So I just came up to pay you a visit, Bill. Heard you were up here. Hope I can be of a little help. But still, he didn't tell me what that formula was again, that prescription for recovery from alcoholism. He waited. He made me ask him, "What is it, Eddie? How do you do this again?" "Oh, well, it's simple," said he. "You get honest with yourself. You talk it out with another in confidence. Make a confession, holding back nothing. You look around at the damage you've done other people and go and make restitution. You try to be helpful to other folks without any demand for reward, and you pray to whatever God there is, and that's all there is to it, period." And he said, "If you can really come to the decision to try that, even though you got no faith, I think maybe it'll help you. It did me." So he talks about the weather and a few friends, and off he's gone again. Sounds very familiar. It's happened a lot of times since then.
This is his white light experience.
One alcoholic talking to another. One alcoholic reaching us at depths that no other human being has ever been able to plumb. So there it was. Well, the rebellion went on. This God doesn't. I began to get more and more depressed. I finally sunk into a lot of blankness. I was a child. Alone, hopeless, crying in the dark. And at last, in desperation, I said, "Well, now, just like a cancer patient, I will do anything to get well, anything to be rid of this fateful thing." And then I said, "If there is a God, will he show himself?" At once, it seemed to me, that room lighted up in a great, bright light. I was caught up into an ecstasy for which there is no description. The overwhelming thought came, "You're a free man." And in the mind's eye, it seemed as though I suddenly stood on a mountain. And around me is a great wind blowing. Not of air, a wind of God. The grace of God. And I knew I was a free man. I don't know how long I was in this singular state. At length it subsided. Of course, I still lie on the bed as if I was. But now, seemingly, I am in a different world. And a great peace steals over me. I seem as one with the universe. And my first cogent thought was, so this is the God of the preacher. Thus came to me in a great flash, in a cataclysm, the realization that there was a God, that he was at hand, and that his grace could do for me what I could not do for myself. Well, that realization, which I then had, has since been shared with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of us if we include our families. And I hear some of you saying, well, boy, I didn't have any hot flash like that guy Bill. I think he was a little morpheus at the time. Yes, you have. The identical thing has been given you, a gift of grace by which you were able to do that which you couldn't before.
Okay, so you don't have to have a hot flash. You can have a spiritual awakening of the educational variety. But what was crucial to me listening to this is the first 12-step call. The down-to-earth, common-sense language. Well, I'm not much of a theologian, Bill, but I just found it helpful to me, and I think it would help you that if you pray to whatever God you believe in when you go through this process. It's not about having a sure faith. And he says it's going to work for you even if you have doubts, I think. It was one of the lines in that. I have to listen to it again. So, I mean, you could... that I mentioned a story in the fourth edition called Flooded with Feelings about an agnostic young guy who's able to work steps and do his third step even though he's still crowded with doubt during the whole process. And the non-evangelical tone, the down-to-earth, no holier than thou, not talking down to him. One drunk talking to another, he can get it. And I can't stay abstinent in AA. I got to be with compulsive overeaters to take care of the food thing, see? Because I got to have one compulsive overeater talking to another. When Joe was talking about hiding the cheesecake when it was at Trinity Sunday, I got that, you know. They wouldn't get that in AA. Actually, I mentioned that I was doing this Big Book workshop at my home group the other night in AA. And I said, it's an OA birthday party, and I'm doing a Big Book workshop. He goes, what'd you do, slip on a Twinkie? I mean, they don't get it, you know. But we get each other here. So one compulsive overeater talking to another in a non-evangelical, down-to-earth, you know, age-old spiritual principles, as old as the hills. You know, get honest with yourself about your eating, what's really bothering you. You write it down, you make a confession, you stop living alone, you join the fellowship, you make restitution, you help people with no sense of compensation, you know, that's real important. We're going to get to some more 12-step stuff. Let me get going here so I can get covered. So if you've had this spiritual awakening and you're starting to experience these promises, you're now in the 10th step. Perseverance. Now the old Oxford Group 5 C's, which I was in the handout yesterday, I don't know if anybody, anybody have a copy of the handout? You'll see the 5 C's. I should have had more handouts, but they had like the some principles. Here's the 5 C's: was confidence, confession, conviction, conversion, and continuance. And our 10th step is, you know, continuance or perseverance with this thing. We've had a spiritual awakening. The obsession has been relieved. We're getting some power in our lives. We can intuitively handle things that used to baffle us. And now we're at the 10th step. And the 10th step promises, which has happened to me, and I'll reread them again just for the halibut. 10th step promises, I believe, on page 84. I mean, these are, to me, along with the second step promises of the consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. With this simple attitude, you cannot fail. Those are the second step promises. They're in the handout.
I mean, those are some of my favorite. And then along with these 10-step promises, we'll see that our new attitude towards food has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not sworn off, right? He's not on the water wagon, right? We've not sworn off cheesecake, you know? Instead, the problem has been removed. The obsession has been lifted. It does not exist for us. We're neither cocky nor we are afraid. That is our experience. Now ask yourself, have you gotten this yet? If the answer honestly is no, you might want to go through the steps again, see? That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So if, by this time, if I've gone through the steps, I'm in fit spiritual condition, the obsession with food should have been relieved. However, continuance, huh? Perseverance, huh? Have I entered the world of the Spirit? I can remember to this day when I realized I entered the world of the Spirit. I went through the process again when I was about 7 years on the program, and I was dying of resentments and everything else 7 years. I was not eating and I was not drinking, but I was dying spiritually, very unhappy. My second sponsor says to me, I never met anybody so unhappy before. I went through the steps again, made some amends, forgave some people, realized, you know, some character defects. What that period was all about, looking backward at it, now only cubed, as the French say, you know, hindsight's 20/20. I could see what that was about is I dragged some character defects with me in the recovery I didn't want to let go of. And they were killing me. You know, and they were manifesting resentments. That's what it was. When I look back on it now, that I realize that's what it was. I was still trying to be on the program and, you know, hold on to some old ideas and some old things I didn't want to let go of. So they manifested resentments. The resentments were killing me. My sponsor saying, that's the alcohol calling out to you. I'm still abstinent, but I'm not a happy camper. And I went through the steps again, and then I was relieved. I was a different person. People are making saying, like, boy, isn't it easier to be around Roy these days, you know? Because I was you can tell a dry drunk in AA, or I knew the equivalent of a dry drunk in OA. I don't know quite the word for him, white knuckle abstainer. I won't mention his name, but this guy was up in San Francisco. He died, and he wouldn't keep money in his pockets because he was afraid, you know, he'd walk into a bakery. I mean, this guy was like, his whole program was sitting there in that dry dock gossiping about other members. I mean, this guy was like he didn't have what I wanted, you know. Dry drunks and white knucklers, whatever you want to call them, stand out like a sore thumb. They're not happy campers, even though they may not be picking up the food. And they're a pain in the ass. Actually, they're quite common in AA because half the program stays sober on, you know, garbage dumping meetings. And when page 52 hits them up the side of the head 20 years into this thing, they get Medicaid. And they're still there. They're not drinking. And they get a vote at a business meeting just like me, you know. Nobody's any more important than anybody else. God doesn't love me more than them. But, you know, I just don't want what they have, you know, because it's real simple. And I realize I'm in Mill Valley one day, and I'm playing chess. Oh, no, I was in the coffee shop, and a yellow jacket was buzzing around the window. Now, he wasn't attacking me. He was just trying to get out, really. But he scared me, right? So I take a napkin, I squished him, you know, because he scared me. So a week later, I'm playing chess in Mill Valley, and they used to throw the Kentucky Fried Chicken stuff in the garbage cans, and the Yellow Jackets love that. And they're all buzzing around the garbage can. I'm playing chess, and bang, one of them nails me in the back of the neck. So I'm thinking, gee, you know, I killed his brother or whatever, his cousin about a week ago. So I call up my sponsor, Martin S., who is still my sponsor, and he's in this program too. He's a double winner. He's in OA and Al-Anon. He's got more sober time than me and less abstinent time, but he's abstinent. He's on this program. And I call up Martin S. and I say, Martin, you're not going to believe this, but like, I squished this yellow jacket a week ago, and I'm sitting there playing chess in Mill Valley, and one of them nails me in the back of my neck. Do you think there's some, like, god of the yellow jackets that's like... And he's laughing, he listens, he says, Roy, I'm not going to get into a theological discussion of whether there's a god of the yellow jackets. That's what organized religions do. They'll tell you who God is. I can tell you, though, that you're starting to see the world in spiritual terms and that perhaps your actions have repercussions. And all of a sudden it hit it on me that I'd experienced the 10-step promise. I had entered the world of the Spirit. And I knew it for the first time for sure. You see? So I can remember to this day when that realization came to me. So here's some of our considerations on the 10-step. Perseverance and continuous. Am I letting up on the spiritual program of action? Resting on my laurels? You know, coast, they say, if you're coasting, you're probably coasting downhill. Do I realize compulsive reading is a subtle foe? Do I realize I have only a daily reprieve? All I get's today to be abstinent. Do these thoughts go with me constantly? You know? Have I begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into me? To some extent, have I become God conscious? You see? If you've experienced, if you've had a spiritual awakening, you're God conscious. All right, you don't like the G word? Like Bill says, you don't have to have a hot flash. You can have a spiritual awakening in the educational variety. Do I realize every day is a day when I must carry the vision of God's will into all my activities? I gotta obey the goddamn traffic laws in Santa Monica. I don't want to. I don't like the police nanny state. I don't like Barbra Streisand's stormtroopers on their little motorcycle. But I have to do it because I'm not happy, joyous, and free when they give me tickets. And I'm not exempt from the traffic laws. That was a spiritual awakening. You know, I had this attitude when I was 11 years on the program. I was getting all these tickets in Mill Valley that I'm a good driver. The traffic laws are for everybody else. I don't have to obey them. Now, this is insanity. My sponsor's listening to this. And he's going like, Roy, that's wrong. Roy, this is wrong. But, I mean, that's where my mind will go, you see. But I have to carry the vision of God's will in all my... I have to put God into my driving. That's a daunting... We used to have whole meetings in Miami about traffic in AA. Well, the whole meeting would be about traffic, you know? I mean, everybody was like hot, pissed off, stressed out, and armed, you know? It was a big deal. All right, now, talk about carrying the vision of God's will in all my activities. I'll just throw this in there. This is from Roy L., but it's all in the book. The five most difficult things for me to do in my life are right out of the big book. These are all in the big book. One is avoid indulging in cynicism over the state of the nations. I have to turn off the goddamn television. I just can't even deal with it. I don't want to see this crap. Two, avoid the manufacture of my own misery. Obey the traffic laws, Roy. Don't disregard your landlord's rights. You know, make sure that the faucet's off. You know, it's his property. You're a renter. It's his property. Three, pause when agitated. That brings, huh? Yeah, very hard. I'm working in LA to find some little kids giving me crap. My inclination is like, grab him by his little throat. Take his little head and bash it into the wall. Now, not only is, that's, I'd get fired. And I'd probably get prosecuted. And there may be something not spiritual about that. Yeah. Not it, but now here's something for us in the program. If we've been around a while, put principles before personality. You know, there's meetings where I don't want to go because there's somebody there that they gonna share again? You know.